And right now, what do we know about its activity and toxicity? How many patients have been reported with it?
At ASCO, there was more than 70 patients that have been treated on this sort of dose escalation, early multi-drugs, multi-levels, and a lot of dose expansion. The drug is mostly studying lung cancer, which has RET fusions, and thyroid cancer. Thyroid cancer has RET point mutations and RET fusions. And so it's kind of an equal balance of these, a couple other rare patients with other RET rearrangements. You can see RET rearrangements also in pancreatic cancer, rarely in colon cancer, even in breast cancer sometimes, so it's worth keeping an eye out for them.
So this is kind of a basket study?
It's a phase one study, right? It's an early study allowing anyone who might be eligible. It's actually now reached its phase two dose, which is 160 milligrams twice daily, and is proceeding now in a phase two expansion. And the expansion is in lung cancer, RET positive, either TKI naive or TKI pretreated, thyroid cancer, either TKI naive or TKI pretreated, or a basket arm that allows any RET rearranged or RET positive cancers that don't fit in the other arms. And so that phase two is right now enrolling. In the phase one, amazingly, there was really very little toxicity. I mean, I think the DLTs in the end at the higher dose was tumor lysis syndrome, if you can imagine.
Wow.
Right? So the drug is very potent for RET. It hits wild type RET, which is the RET that you see in RET rearrangements, and it inhibits mutant RET. So it overcomes resistance mutations, we think, and has really no off-target toxicities. And so I think it's going to be another real home run, much like osimertinib and alectinib, potent inhibition and durable responses, but we need to see that in phase two.
Any other RET inhibitors out there that are similarly exciting?
So there is a second drug also being developed at the same time, another potent RET inhibitor, intelligently designed to inhibit RET without other targets, and also is in dose escalation, I think has now gone to dose expansion, also very tolerable. Both of these drugs are out there for our patients. And so it's like whichever center is closer to you, get your patients on these trials because these drugs really can make an impact.
And I guess we've gone past the whole concepts of IPASS type studies where targeted therapy is compared to chemotherapy. It seems like nowadays, if you see something like this, you see a high response rate targeted therapy, it's going first line?
It's a great question. I mean, I think the regulatory approach differs a little bit around the globe. Increasingly in the US, the FDA has said, look, it's just when you have a drug that has this kind of efficacy and tolerability, like either of these two new potent RET inhibitors, it's almost unethical to randomize them versus chemotherapy when you know this drug is so effective. I think in other parts of the world, there still is a need for randomized trials to sort of move the regulatory bar. And so I think that's a question a lot of companies are struggling with. It's a big question whether you're going to launch a randomized trial when you can see this obvious activity. So my impression is that yes, today it's ethical and appropriate to use these drugs first line if you can get the patients onto the trial. Whether the trials will allow it, I mean, that's a moving target. But it feels like these will replace chemo for these patients.
I'm just thinking now, I think dabrafenib, trametinib was approved without a comparative study, right, to chemo, or was there one?
True, no comparative study, but let's remember that that combination has extensive randomized data in melanoma, right? So that's an already approved combination in melanoma where we know this combination is better than chemo in melanoma, where you know two drugs is better than one drug already in melanoma. And so you can sort of tag along on that regulatory path to say, here, we think those principles apply in lung cancer as well. And so I think it's a slightly different story. With these RET inhibitors, you need to have a plan in lung cancer and in thyroid cancer. And we should be clear, in thyroid cancer, vandetanib is approved. Cabozantinib is approved. So there are standard of care multi-kinase RET inhibitors, and we need to figure out a plan to, in many ways, replace those with these likely more effective, certainly more tolerable drugs.
And it's interesting when you ask investigators. We did a project with Craig Riley about a year and a half ago, and I think you're one of the people you actually surveyed and just asked people what they were doing outside a trial setting in terms of first-line therapy. Clearly, obviously, EGFR, ALK, and ROS1 was straightforward, but I think that BRAF people were using a first-line, but also people were using for MET exon 14 crizotinib, which isn't approved. Is that your approach to those patients, first-line crizotinib?
I have done that. I mean, my experience in MET exon 14 cancers is that they can be very aggressive, right? They can really be explosively aggressive. And so I had a patient where I started chemo and then the MET came back. They were already failing chemo after one cycle. I switched them to MET. If their cancer was well controlled enough, I might start with MET up front. It's true that crizotinib is a multi-kinase inhibitor of ALK, ROS, and MET, so it can be used to target MET. I think you have to personalize that for the patient. The response rate in PFS data for crizotinib and MET exon 14 hasn't been as impressive. I mean, you can certainly see responses. They're transient. The median PFS, I think, is only in the range of 5 or 6 months. So I think there was a lot of optimism that that would move the bar. I'm not sure the clinical data has panned out quite as much. And so that's still an unanswered question for me.